Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. I'm Jeff, and of course, John, the co-host of co-hosts, is here with me. We've got something a little special for you this week. We've gone back and picked a few of our least favorite RPGs and scoured the ends of the internet to determine whether they had any more content to uncover and discuss. And lo and behold, indeed they did. We're thrilled to present you with not one, but two supplements this week, as we dive with you into Prime Directive, Federation, and Haven. City of Violence. Path of Rage. All right, welcome back. Hi, John. How you doing today?
So hungover.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We had a bachelor party last night.
Woo!
Right here at the Jeff house, and it was a rough time on John, I guess. I didn't see you acting drunk at any point.
I was not drunk at any point, and yet.
Man, that's terrible.
It is the worst. It's the worst possible thing that could happen to you, is to drink, not get drunk, but still get hungover.
I feel like you should be allowed to report that to someone. Like, you should be able to go to the police now.
Why isn't there an agency for that?
Yeah, call the Better Business Bureau and tell them about SoCo and whatever cheap shit vodka it is I have around it. I think it was called Romanoff.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's got an actual Black Widow in every bottle.
That's good. That's more Black Widow merchandise than Marvel has put out.
Hey! Oh! That's one of my favorite things to see people fighting about on the internet. What did we do this week, John?
We read a couple things. Both of them were kind of terrible, but one was way better than the other one, and we're not going to read that one first.
All right, you got to earn your fun here on System Mastery.
Yeah, you got to work for it.
Roll 3d6 down the middle. Oh, down the line. That's what it is. Down the middle would make
any
sense.
Right down the middle.
Right down the middle. Split the difference on 3d6. Oh, we're tired and hungover. Okay, moving along. The first thing we read is UFP, the Federation Sourcebook. And that is a Prime Directive sourcebook. And not GURPS Prime Directive or D20 Prime Directive. And I believe they are currently working on a Savage Worlds version of this as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because if there's something that the world needs more of, it's more of this Prime Directive nonsense.
Oh my god. See, So we did this as like episode 4 was Prime Directive. And, man, I still think all of these other ones would be fine, but anytime I see a Prime Directive game getting made, it just makes me sad. Because Star Trek, as a game for an RPG, is great. You can do a lot of interesting things with it. And then there's the Starfleet system for Prime Directive, which is the worst.
Well, it's like a license was created and now exists, and everyone's afraid to get rid of it.
Well, I think whoever has it is just like, nah, fuck you. You managed to sign this away when fucking Star Trek was not known by anyone, so by God, I will cling tenaciously to it and never let it go.
It's kind of like how technically the rights to Namor the Submariner are held by Universal. Like, you know, if you think about it, if you're at all familiar with the Marvel Cinematic Universe nonsense and how they can't have the X-Men because Fox has the X-Men, and they can't have Fantastic Four because Fox has the Fantastic Four, blah, 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 Universal owns the rights to Namor. They purchased them years before any of this shit happened in a weird contract deal that's not especially well understood. And so no one can touch Namor, but by God, they're sitting on those rights because they don't want Marvel to make more money.
Oh, yeah.
But they also don't want to make a Namor movie because what the fuck would that be?
Oh, yeah. Well, the problem is the only way a Namor movie works is if it's within a Marvel universe.
Right.
You can't just be like, I don't know, here's this guy who's the lower rent version of Aquaman.
That's really saying something.
Oh, yeah.
Who's this? Well, he's an angry, kind of severe-looking white guy with wings on his feet, and he lives underwater.
Basically, it's flying Spock, and he's in his underoos. There you go.
Yo. He literally looks like he's wearing Aquaman underoos.
Yeah.
Like he's got green, scaled underpants on.
He is one of the weirdest characters, and I absolutely love it.
I know. Anyway, moving along to the actual point. You can tell that we are kind of dodging around talking about Starfleet. Okay, so as a quick primer, Starfleet is the Star Trek universe as it existed around 1970 or so, when there wasn't really anything that was famous anymore. The original show was off the air, the first movie had come and gone and was widely regarded as pretty boring, and no one was doing anything with Star Trek. So we're years before TNG, we're years before the announcement of Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, and the only other thing that's even on the air is that terrible animated series.
Yeah, so this entire thing basically does an alternate reality version of Star Trek, because when they got a hold of it, I guess the license just let them do whatever they wanted to. So they just decided to make up an entire new history for what happened.
Yeah, and then it's interesting because they own the rights to the term Federation, Prime Directive, Starfleet, some of the races, and some of the shapes of the ships, and that's it. So they can't, for example, mention Kirk or Spock.
Yeah, and they never say Star Trek.
Or Enterprise.
Yeah.
So it's just some Star Trek stuff without saying Star Trek, and some races that you've heard of, plus a bunch you haven't. And what do you know, the ones you haven't heard of are way more fancy looking.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's that whole thing where as soon as you go from, oh, we had a live-action sci-fi thing, and we weren't allowed to do whatever, and then we move to either a book or an animated show, and, hey, wouldn't you know it, all of a sudden now there's all these tentacle monsters and weird furry aliens with 27 limbs, and you're like, okay, great.
Yeah. So, neither of us particularly cared for the original Star Trek, or Starfleet, Prime Directive RPG, if I remember correctly. I think we recorded that one a long time ago. We're going all the way back to episode 4.
No, in particular, I hated it because of the system behind it, which was the tri-code system.
Yeah.
Which was terrible.
You rolled a number of D6s equivalent to, like, your stat plus the skill that you had in a specific area, and then you only counted the number of sixes you got? Is that right? I want to say it was specifically you added up all the sixes you got, and something about how they exploded.
Well, you're looking for the highest that you rolled among your dice, and then if you got a certain amount, it would explode.
Yeah.
But the problem was it also had this granular success, and unless you got the highest level of success, if you got a complete success, then you got to do whatever it was you set out to do.
The other ones were just you don't in varying degrees.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I got a moderate success. Well, you kind of almost did that thing.
I try to repair this turbo lift. What happens? On a failure, the turbo lift is even more broken. On a minor success, it's even more broken, but only a little. On a moderate success, it didn't fix it. And on a total success, you did fix it. And that's how it was with all of them.
Yeah, it was all, there were botches, which would fuck everything up.
Yeah.
Failures, which would mostly fuck things up. And then if you got a minor success, it was you managed to not fuck things up. You just didn't do anything.
Right. So that was a big problem, and it was really hard to actually succeed at anything in a game that's supposed to be about highly technical professionals.
Yeah. Every time you'd look at something and it was like, I'm the chief engineer and I need to go do a thing. And you'd go, okay, but if I roll for this and just fuck up the roll, then I don't do anything. Or even if I roll for this and do decently, I still don't do anything.
No, I'm still working on it. And meanwhile, the captain's trying to cut the number of hours it takes because this is a Star Trek game. So every couple minutes he calls and says, how many hours will it take to fix that stupid elevator? And you're like, 8. And he goes, you've got 6.
The only problem is that would be great, but it's not. That's not what the game is because it's not a Star Trek game. It's fucking
Starfleet.
It's Starfleet, which means that you're actually just super badass space spies.
Every one of us is wearing a cool unzipped jacket.
Yeah, I've got my leather jacket that says I'm part of the evil Raven squad of the Prime Team.
We're the fighting mongooses.
We're the blue barracudas. Oh, wait, hold on.
Okay, so I did Futurama and you did Legend of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah,
is that accurate?
That's what happened there.
Okay, so let's just make up our own. The Green Tapirs.
Yeah, I'm part of the Scarlet Speedsters. Damn it.
You're just having trouble with this. I'm part of the extended Bat family of wait.
Hold on.
Okay, so let's actually talk about what we read this week. So Federation has almost nothing to do with the Federation of Planets.
Yeah, it's really weird because the first thing it opens up on is just psychic powers.
Yeah, it's got a little story at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Well, the stories for this, again, why it's not Star Trek at all and is actually the Prime Directive game is because all of your characters are not quite, they act like they were mercenaries, essentially. but they're like SEAL Team 6 of Starfleet, and you get sent into places that normal people couldn't handle.
Yeah.
And so all of the fiction is like, yeah, and then, you know, I went up to him and I told him what, and then we got into a shootout, and then I had to get away on my hover bike. And I'm like, none of this exists. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's all very punchy punch, kind of weird Black Ops mercenaries, but we live on Star Trek ships, and every once in a while we get sent down to a planet to rough shit up old school style.
Oh, yeah, and there's like one of the fictions where they're going through, like, all right, so we've got this and that, and I've got our tricorders, and I've got our backpacks, and hey, where's all the guns? And then they have to contact the guy in charge.
Their briefing officer.
You can't have those guns. This is a peaceful operation. You blew up four city blocks. And I'm like, oh my god.
But I get results, briefing officer.
Yeah, the whole thing just reads like the worst 80s action film.
It's really weird. It's a weird concept to expand Star Trek into. And I understand they were trying to come up with a way for Star Trek to work as an RPG, which means you have to have people who can leave the ship in a group every time.
Yeah, but...
And they also... The problem is that they had this kind of naked devotion to how stupid Star Trek was, because that's the weirdest thing to me about these books. They seem to hate Star Trek. They're like, well, Star Trek's always... Okay, Kirk goes down to the planet, and he always brings Spock and Bones and...
And then some red shirt
guy. Yeah, some red shirt and maybe Chekhov if he's into it. And every time they do that, and this book's like, no, that's fucking stupid.
The captain would never go down. I'm like, yeah, but it's Star Trek, and he always does. So always that's the way does. This universe works.
Every good episode of Star Trek is about one of the captains being stuck on a planet with some alien. So it clearly happens. Get with the program and move along. But no, instead it's all mercenary badassery.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think we got into this when we originally reviewed it, but the system itself looks at it and is like, I could do this better.
Yeah, we're going to do this right. So here's a whole bunch of ranks and titles and medals you can earn. Okay, all right, that sounds Star Trek-y to me. Oh, here's how much I get paid? Great. Great. All right, well, anyway, yeah, first thing it opens up on is psychic powers.
Yeah, you can, because if you were a Vulcan in the original set, you could have some psychic powers because, you know, Vulcans, they can do whatever.
It had like three that they could have, and they were things like mind scan and mind read, all the stuff that you've seen Spock do. Now, in this one, they expand on Spock being just a generic Vulcan psychic, and that there are actually eight more kinds of Vulcan psychics, of which each one of them is specialized in something stupid. So, if you become one of these psychics, you can have three other psychic powers, which are all very specific. So, for example, you could be a member of the Path of Jen'Hyar, which is thoughts and the mind, and so you get better at mind reading and shit.
Yeah, or you can get things like, I'm part of the Path of Sren Kondakali, and I've got essentially mind control.
Or you could be a Surini Maklar and be really good at factual storage and computation. Although my favorite of these is the Paktok Kalfi, who are specialists in pure intellect, and all they can do is solve math problems faster. And it even tells you right in there, these guys suck on prime teams and no one takes them because all they do is solve math problems fast.
Yeah, that's all it is I bend my psychic power into becoming a calculator.
I'm a big nerd. That's their power. So there are eight of these, and every one of them is three more powers, and every one of the power sets is just three tricodes.
And each power is oddly not super great. Like, even the one that's like, I've got mind control, and you'd go, holy shit, that's amazing. Except, it's like the third level of power that you can get is one where you actually get to make suggestions to someone.
Yeah.
And you have to have an amazing success on that to make them want to do anything.
Yeah. The only one I thought was any good was the Path of Vesser of Track. And that's the one that's just body performance.
Oh, yeah. So, well, it's just, I get tougher.
Yeah,
and
you can,
stronger.
You can increase your stats. And it lets you increase any one of your physical stats by three for like hours. And that's pretty great. Like, if you want to play as the combat guy in the game, you could be that kind of psychic and build up your strength or whatever, or dexterity or whatever, and just go to town on someone with, whatever crazy Vulcan weapon you want. That thing that looked like a shovel, I want to say.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
And then, outside of that, if you didn't want to be a Vulcan that was a psychic, you could be a non-Vulcan psychic, and their powers are way better than the Vulcan powers, because it includes shit like telekinesis.
Yeah, and way better mind reading. It's weird. Human or anyone. There's like six races that can be psychic, and all of them do really good in what's called the Shruniki, or I think this Shruniki, Shrunikai. Whatever. That's the people who are psychic but aren't Vulcans.
Yeah, and the non-Vulcan psychics all get way better powers. They get to do stuff that you'd want to do as a psychic, like all those sort of classic weird things. And, yeah.
And then following that, there's about a million more skills. And just for reference, there were like 80, 90-some skills in the original Starfleet. This has a whole bunch more. They're mostly pertaining to things that are specific to this book. So there are operations of various types of electronics and so on that are in here. But then there are ones that I am amazed that in 90 skills in the first book they didn't get to. Stealth is one of the skills in this book.
Yeah, they also introduced the idea of a sub-skill, where now if you have medical training, you can have medical training in like 15 different versions of stuff. So you can be like, I have medical training in surgery, or in specifically like xenobiology, or whatever it happens to be.
Because it wasn't hard enough to accomplish a skill in this game already.
Yeah, now it's, oh well, you didn't have the sub-ability in whatever? You can't do a thing.
And also, surgery is 100% essential, so all they've done is make it more specific for you to get surgery now. Because that's the only way to heal wounds in this game.
Yeah, the medicine roll was already what you had to do to get anyone any HP back, and now you just have to put more points into it. Great.
Hooray! Okay, great. So this book also introduces a significant number of new races you could play as.
Yeah.
And we'll zip through those real quick, because I thought they were actually the most interesting part of this book. They're actually kind of fun to read. Because they're just goofy from top to bottom. So there's only a couple of the new races that are actual races from Star Trek.
Yeah.
The first one is the Tellarites. And Tellarites, you would vaguely remember from Star Trek, as basically being angry, bearded dwarfs.
Kind of.
They're also dumb, I think that was part of their deal. No, I'm thinking of the Pakled.
Yeah, no. You've got kind of bat-nosed, little beardy guys.
Yeah, they're not that big. They're significantly shorter than you. They're like Ugnaughts of Star Trek.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and they're grumpy. That's their whole deal. They're grumpy, and their whole culture is based on being insulting and brusque to each other. No one else likes them. That's the whole deal with them. They're threatening, they're arrogant, they're just kind of dumpy little bearded assholes. Kind of like John.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, not like me. I'm a dumpy little bearded nice guy.
Yeah, that's M'lady. 100% accurate. I don't know why these girls won't get with me. I'm such a nice guy.
I know. It's like being a nice guy I know it's a baseline marginal talent that I have, so that should be enough, right? Like everyone's a nice guy, but I am too. Red pill. Whatever. Okay. So Tellarites are just annoying, dumpy assholes that no one wants to play as. Great.
Which is great because they're like, yeah, sure, you can be in our Federation. You're a huge jerk. I love that.
Yeah. Following them, you've got the Brekkon, and the Brekkon are hilarious because they're giant golden gods. They're literally like 8-foot-tall gold-skinned humanoids with four arms.
Yeah, it is the Rahu Man from Rifts, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, or Goro from your Mortal Kombat games.
Yep, it is 100% that.
Yeah, so they're just giant. They're very friendly. They're basically just human. There's not too much about them that's unique. The one big thing with them is that there are always two of them anywhere. If there's one of them, there's two. Because their whole history is that a long time ago, their planet split in half, politically, and then they just started fighting forever. And the peace treaty that they agreed on was, okay, alright, we'll stop fighting, but to make sure that we never betray each other again, wherever someone from this one faction goes, someone from this other faction also has to go to keep an eye on each other. So if you have one of these guys on your ship, if you're playing as one, that means there's another one on the ship somewhere, probably doing the same thing as you to keep an eye on you.
The weird thing is, that means either if you play one of these guys, you have to convince someone else you're playing with to also be one, or you gotta go, all right, well, I'm on a prime team, which means, like, what if the one guy who is following you around, you're like, I'm a super awesome secret agent, and the guy who's following me around is just some bumbling idiot? Like, do I have to take him with me on my missions?
Well, you probably just don't get into Starfleet then. That's the way it works. Because it's a whole cultural thing where they have to prove themselves to get onto prime teams. I can't imagine that these guys are on prime teams all that often.
No.
Because you'd have to have two of them. They'd have to have made it all the way through all this ridiculous training.
Oh, again, it's just like the Tellarites. You're like, well, none of these would have made it onto a prime team because they hate working with other people.
Well, the weird thing with the Brekkon is that other than this one weird restriction about there always being two of them, they're great. They have amazing stats.
There's this one weird restriction. Starfleet hates them.
Burn fat fast with four huge arms. Invented by an old school teacher. Okay, no. The big thing with the Brecon is they have amazing stats, and the game doesn't get how powerful forearms are, so it just gives them whatever it wants for forearms. Oh, they get twice as many actions as long as those actions aren't moves. That's their power.
Yeah, which, you know, if I'm getting to decide between I could be a human and my power is being a human, or I can be this guy and my power is being better than everyone, meh.
Yeah, so the Brecon are great, provided you can convince someone else to also play a crazy powerful character.
Oh, darn.
Okay, up after the Brecon are the Prelarians. And the Prelarians are literally space dwarves.
Yeah, actually space dwarves.
They're short, they're stocky, they're from high gravity planets, and they love rocks.
Yay!
They religiously love rocks. So that's their whole deal. The picture of them is amazing because they are what? They're basically like Jersey gym rats, except dwarves from space.
Yeah, I mean, you see the picture of it, and you can already hear them going, Ayo!
Gym tanning laundry, am I right? That's what you get from looking at these guys. Literally, there's one holding two tomahawks. Straight up tomahawks from like an old cowboy western.
Yep.
Except that the attachment on them, the tomahawks, because of the size, they really look like those things that in cartoons that doctors would use to check your knee reflexes.
Yeah.
Like he's just standing there going, woo, knee reflexes, bro! Because he's actually got, he's doing the woo face, isn't he?
No, this is 100% arm raised, just going, woo!
No, this guy is yelling spring break.
Finally. They're on, what was it, Ryza?
Ryza, yeah, they're Ryza. The pleasure planet where women have big 80s hair and soft pastels wander the deserts. Ryza looked awful. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, we barely saw any of it, but it kind of just looked like...
We get a little bit in TNG and then a lot in DS9.
Yeah.
Because they have a whole murder mystery set there in DS9 because Worf can't learn how to have fun. Until he agrees to go skinny dipping. You know, as much as that sounds terrible, at least it's Worf not just getting his ass kicked in the first 5 minutes by a bigger monster to prove how big the monster is.
Well, that's all TNG did. DS9 at least was like, Worf, you're competent.
You're comedy relief on this show. Have fun, buddy. You get to date all the hot girls, though, that's for sure.
Good job.
All right, so anyway, these guys are little dwarf bros. Like, yeah, they're straight-up bros. They look like they grease their hair. Everything about them screams like, I'm on Entourage. Okay, great. Otherwise, they're normal. They're pretty basic class race. Okay, coming up after that is the Mynienni.
Okay, this is actually my favorite of the things they put in there. Like I was saying earlier, whenever you go from, hey, we were doing a live-action show, to now we're just writing a book or making a cartoon and we can do whatever, the Mynienni are just tentacles.
Yeah, like, they're a bunch of hair-thick tentacles radiating outward from a balloon with two huge eyes at the top.
Hooray! And everyone kind of is weirded out by them. Like, it says that they just don't usually get along very well with other people because the other people are like, you're weird.
Well, their whole deal is that for decades, they've been in the Federation, but they haven't been actively involved. Like, they've just been members of the Federation, but they refuse to vote on anything. They don't really voice any concerns.
They give no shits.
Their only real interest is to get into Federation ships so that they can set up Mynienni colonies on other planets. And so they're really just hitching a ride on Federation resources to build their planetary establishments. Except in the past 20 years, they've suddenly gone batshit crazy because they think that something's about to happen.
Huh.
And so all of a sudden they vote constantly. And what actually, it's a cool story because it's like, okay, every Mynienni that was in Starfleet Command all of a sudden goes home, and the next day is replaced by a completely different flock of Mynienni. And these ones are all like, we are all worried about the same thing, and we will constantly vote to prepare for it. And it's funny because they call it something funny. They say, the Burnishers are now known to be returning. We must all be ready to meet them on their terms.
Yeah, all right. That's not creepy at all.
Yeah, so they're basically weird little weirdos that are maybe 2 or 3 feet off the ground because they're literally an inverted pear with giant squid eyes and a bunch of hairs coming off them. They look like a monster cousin it.
Yeah, they are the weirdest thing that you would ever see in Star Trek.
Even when they show up in the stories, it's just like, oh yeah, we have a guy on our ship who's like a tech officer named Beup Ping.
I love that guy. Beup Ping!
And all he does is hang out in the Jeffries tubes and fix shit.
And he just spends weeks in the tubes.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Just fixing stuff. And everyone's like, it's like having a rat for your technical officer. You never know where he is, but you know he's doing rat stuff. All right, and then there's the last one. And the last one are the Frolly,
which are straight out of Twilight Zone, Eye of the Beholder episode.
I kind of thought, for me, they kind of looked like the way they did the Xandarians and Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, they have the same head ridges, and all the pictures of them give them a little ponytail and make them look stuffy. They're always like, I'm in a waistcoat.
Meh.
But they're basically electric eel men.
Sweet.
That's their whole deal. They can generate...
I love the Electric Eelmen. They're my favorite band.
So here's the thing with these fucking guys. They can generate a bioelectric charge and use it to shock people or to power things. To do that, they have to make a tricode check. And it's not very easy. They actually don't succeed. It's about a 40% chance of getting the complete success on an average Frolly trying to complete its bioelectric charge. Okay, whatever. That's fine. Maybe it's hard for them. Maybe they've evolved past electric eels. Okay, hang on and get this. They pride themselves on their bioelectric charge, and it is the way they power all of their devices.
Yay.
Which means that it's a whole planet where 40% of the time they can successfully turn on their flashlights. The other 40%, they just stand around going, I'm not shocky enough.
Oh.
Otherwise, they're kind of stiff upper lip, kind of stuffy little weirdos. That's their deal. They're eternally put upon as far as races go.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's the Frolly. Okay, after the Frolly, we get to what you usually get in a bad supplement to an RPG, and part of the reason why we don't cover supplements very often, because it's just endless lists.
Yay! We get a whole equipment section that's like, hey, you can have this equipment. It even has stuff that they don't use anymore. It's like, back in the day, they had laser guns instead of the phasers. But they're terrible. Here's stats for them, though.
Yeah, and then right after the races, here's a bunch of pictures of Starfleet ships. So imagine a whole bunch of very samey-looking top views of the Enterprise.
Yeah, and the thing is, they look basically exactly the same. Like, all of them, except maybe a little thicker in one area.
Every once in a while, they'll give you one that's got one engine or three engines or something.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's very original Enterprise.
Yeah. And all they do here is just list how many, whether or not they have prime teams on them. And they do that by telling you whether or not they are lucky enough to have a prime team.
Oh, yeah.
Because if there's one thing my ship has been, like my science ship, I always feel terrible on my little science ship that it doesn't have a bunch of brawling, swaggering douche bros wearing open jackets wandering around going, yeah, punch each other, kill indigenous animals, bro.
Yeah, the actual... the prime team on all the various ships, I still don't understand why this is a thing that they think is amazing, but whatever.
The thing is, the Starfleet, when they purchased the license, they were doing it to make war games. Like, you know, basically 40K style war games where they zip around.
Yeah.
And, they then decided to branch out into RPGs. And so the prime director of the prime team was their kind of idea about how to make that work. Like, how could we make a little party that could go down on a planet? Anyway, just lists and lists and lists of ships. It goes on for pages and pages, and it's really boring. And that's it. After that, there's a couple of, like, you can photocopy this page to make, like, flamethrower templates. There's a character sheet that's, like, 10 pages long. And that's it. That's the whole book. It's kind of unfocused. I don't know why they called it Federation. I guess because they added a few races to the Federation.
Yeah, I mean, it does give you a little background on their version of what happened with the Federation.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's just another word that they had the rights to.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, so, you want to talk briefly? You want to review this book before we move on to the next? What would you say is your favorite part of Federation? You already said it. Just say it again.
Pew!
There you go. It's those little fuckers. The little
hair guys are amazing.
Miney Yenny. Great. Yeah. Okay. I'd say my favorite thing is the dwarf bros. I thought they were great. The Prolarians.
Yeah.
Because they're all just like, woo! Yeah, bro.
Yeah, they can hang out.
Gotta get my tan on this high graph planet. I like rocks.
Rocks, bro. All rocks.
Right. And, least favorite thing?
Mostly I get enraged at their different version of the Star Trek history, because it's just worse.
Yeah, that's true. I would say my least favorite thing in this book is that it added skills and subdivided them further to just make it harder to build your character instead of making your character more viable. Did this change your opinion? Would you play Prime Directive now?
Oh, good lord, no. Like, as much as I do love the idea of being a stupid fucking balloon with hair all over, I am that already.
I know, you achieved your goals.
Yeah, great. Congratulations, that's what I am.
Not just a talking hot dog anymore.
No, not just.
Also that, though.
But also that.
Also a cartoon talking hot dog, as has been established.
Yes, as we have established.
Yeah, okay.
So would you... Huh?
Has this changed my opinion about playing Prime Directive?
Yeah.
God, no. No, not at all. It made it worse. I hate saying that because it added a bunch of races and it tried, but it made it worse by subdividing the skills up and making, and adding complexity. It really added complexity. There's a whole section in there that makes initiative harder.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if initiative wasn't realistic enough for you, here's a whole new set of tricodes you could roll for initiative. And if that's not enough, here's the third level of advanced initiative that you can go to get even more complicated with who gets to shoot their dumb phaser first.
Yeah, they do have a little subsection that's like, here's alternate rules you could use that, you know, are essentially we printed our house rules. But by the way, none of the modules or adventures have been written with these rules in mind, so it might fuck everything up.
This book remains, 40 episodes later, this book remains the most mean to players from the DM's perspective that I've come across.
Yep.
So there you go. All right, now you're really excited to get to the next one.
I'm so excited. I am cradling this book like a newborn baby.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that you own Path of Rage and I'm the one who has to own Federation.
Ha 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 ha.
And because you forgot to bring Federation, that I had to buy the PDF of Federation today, which means I now own two Federations.
Yeah, you own Federation twice. It's great. I'm glad.
You owed me $10 earlier. Now you owe me $16. That's what's happening.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's half of it. Just half.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, great. Moving on. Path of Rage. Tell me all about it, Maestro.
It is a City of Haven source book.
City of Haven?
Yeah. They say it is a City of Haven source book. Not Haven. City of Violence.
Oh, okay. That's different.
They have, for some reason, abandoned that in the first, like, opening cover.
Fair enough. Now, let's say I was back for more.
Let's just say. So, even before we get into this...
Mm-hmm.
The book opens with a quote from Oscar Wilde,
mm-hmm.
who, I mean, noted hardcore badass Oscar Wilde.
Oh, yeah. The first...
what you want to represent your City of Violence.
So, before we... Real quick. Let's hear the quote.
Yeah. Experience is simply the name we give our mistakes. Whereas, it's kind of weird, because I thought the name we gave our mistakes was Haven, City of Violence.
See, I thought we just called them mistakes, and that's why that's why we had that word. Is that the word we call our experience?
Yeah. Fuck you, Oscar Wilde. How dare you try and be pithy?
Yeah. Okay, so real quick, let's back up and tell people what Haven was, because Haven is episode 11 of our show, and so it's pretty far back as well.
If you haven't listened to Haven, City of Violence, let me suggest you do that.
Yeah. Okay, so Haven, City of Violence is a work by one Mr. Louis Porter Jr., who wanted to create a realistic RPG for people who had it up to here with fantasy bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
And so he created a world that's basically Gotham plus Bloodhaven equals blood, and populated with a bunch of psychopaths and addicts and so on, and there is not a single woman in the story ever in either book who was not either raped a bunch or is a prostitute.
Yay!
Never once. Not once. And it's all just gun porn, and it's basically the whole rule set is just D20 rules, but backwards. You try to roll low on a D20.
Yeah, it is Frank Miller made an RPG, and then someone else went along and ruined Frank Miller's writing.
Yeah, that's about it. So there you go. Go back and listen to it. It's one of our most popular episodes. That one in Made.
Yeah.
All right.
So after our quote, we get into what I kind of just want to read entirely to you right now.
That's okay. I'm going to drink my Appletini here, and you go for it.
All right. So we start off the very first thing. So, you're back for more.
oh, man. Appletini up my nose. So you're back for more. So, let me ask you, is it the correct you're?
Yes. So, it's basically, so you are back for more.
Lovely.
Just like an addict on crack, you couldn't stay away from us. I knew the second that you picked the book up that you liked it and would only get better from there. Well, since you're reading this book, I can assume that you have already picked up a copy of our game, Haven, City of Violence, role-playing game rulebook.
Yeah, we have. We have a copy of that.
If you don't have it, why the hell not? Go out and buy it now! Now is in all caps. The book you are now holding in your hands is a compendium and sourcebook of all new items and interesting materials. In addition to new benefits, drawbacks, skills, and weapons, we give you more background on the city itself. So dive on in, learn more about what you really have gotten yourself into. The city of Haven holds many secrets, and now it's time to learn. I knew you'd be back. Okay. Oh, fuck it. I'm just gonna read another thing. I don't even care.
All right, take it. This is your book.
One more thing. So we then get another section called "Running with Scissors," or as I call it, "The Future of Haven."
Ugh, there's a lot of that. Everything in this book has one of those titles and subtitle things.
It's this thing, or you know, more like meh.
Yeah.
The reason I am writing this is to confront some of the misconceptions that have been planted into your head in the recent months concerning the direction of Haven, City of Violence.
Who was doing that?
Yeah, who, what misconception, who even gave a shit about this book?
Was this a big deal for a while? I have no idea.
No, our
whole no research is coming back to bite us here, but I love the idea that there was a negative rumor campaign being spread around about this.
Who could possibly have a negative opinion of Haven?
City of Violence.
Many people feel that Haven is a simple game about gangsters killing cops and getting away with it. Some feel that this game is about lawmen trying to clean up a dirty and corrupt city. Others feel that this game is a piece of crap, and quite frankly, I don't give a rat's ass about them, so to hell with them.
Oh, to hell with us.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad. Oh, why would you say that?
Why would you say that? We're literally the first people in 20 years to buy this book.
yeah. So he gets all stupid confrontational, which is wonderful, and I love it.
Yeah. And then we get right to some art and so on. Now, just so you know, the type of supplement that we're talking about here, this supplement is 100% just the story of the city. So it's just paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of what's going on in Haven, let's break it down by neighborhood, and let's put in a bunch of unrelated art of people punching other people.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things where it's like, all right, we'll talk about this neighborhood, and then there's just art of, like, someone using a samurai sword to cut a guy's arm off, and you're like, that has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, and it opens on a crusty punk that looks exactly like your old Rock Band character.
Yeah.
So.
Randy Nigel Randy.
Lead guitarist of the Magic Sex Blokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we get a bunch of the different areas, and we get a bunch of NPCs. Now, we very briefly went into that in our original review, but it's because the original book just kind of gave you an overview of the different places you could be, and kind of what gangs were there. This goes deeper into it and tells you, like, alright, here are the sections of these different boroughs.
It's just by neighborhood.
Oh yeah, so it's like, alright, here's like Germantown or Gideon Park.
Some of them are literally like two streets across. And the worst part is every one of them is written the same way. In this sort of, not really telling you what's in there, but just in a sort of, this is how deadly this place is. So it'll be like, the Numbers Alley. People who live here don't have a name. They have a number of days they'll be alive. After they die, that number is up. How many days will you survive in the days of numbered alley days? And then it just moves on to the next thing.
And the weirdest thing for me with his descriptions is he fluctuates back and forth between wanting to tell us actual statistics and not giving a shit.
Yeah.
So he'll be like, there's 700 people that live in this neighborhood, and the average income is between, like, 10,000 and 30,000, and gives us these weird statistics. And then he'll go to a different part of town, and it's just, in this part of town, the only rule is there are no rules. If you don't have a gun by your side, then you don't have a friend. And you're like, oh, come on.
The most common cause of death is blunt object to the back of the head.
The most common cause of death is stupidity for being in this neighborhood when you're not part of the gangers.
Yeah, it just goes on and on like that. And it's, I'm going to say a few things about this. First of all, I've always been amazed by how this city is 100% people killing each other with rocket launchers, but then also it's a well-known import town, and so there's always ships coming in and out, and it's got a whole lot of major cultural center stuff. It's an acting city, even though it's apparently near Chicago. No, sorry, it's on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere near one of the major East Coast cities.
It's a New York equivalent as well.
Yeah, it's basically a New York. But so it's like if New York had basically a nonstop, like, tribes game going on in it, where people are just bouncing off trampolines and firing rocket launches at each other.
We had mentioned this the first review, but it had years for, like, this was the year of fire.
Oh, yeah.
The year of blood.
It was worse than that. It was literally the year of the blood tornado.
And it was...
Which, incidentally, is a prime team, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. The blood tornadoes.
Yeah.
But it goes on and on about how, like, this section is garbage, and this section is full of prostitutes, and this section is just only drugs and the triads.
The average lifespan is, like, 21. And then it's like, oh, also, there's some major cultural center museums here.
Oh, yeah, and then also there's a part of town that's all rich people, and everyone's a millionaire there. And you go, no, you're wrong.
No, that's...
Not in this city.
Pretend your city is Detroit for a few minutes, because that's what it is. Every time he describes a factory part of town, it's crumbling abandoned factories.
Yeah.
Every time. It's all just, all the work has moved out of Haven. Okay, what are all these millionaires doing here? How come they didn't get the fuck out? They can afford to.
Yeah. And it's not like, oh, they need to exploit this city for whatever. There's nothing there.
There's nothing.
What are they doing?
All they do is hang out at the couple of major cultural centers. And I really want to talk about the museum, because they have the Museum of Mechanical Engineering in Haven. And it contains things like a working spaceship and an active AI and a perpetual motion generator. All these things. As soon as I read the museum, I was like, wait a minute. He's just writing Gotham City down.
Literally. It holds a giant penny and a big Tyrannosaurus.
Robot T-Rex and a bunch of costumes for Robins. But he's literally describing Gotham, because it's just a whole bunch of horrible places, like Gotham is. And then also a bunch of abandoned factories that used to build stuff in a specific type. Like, oh, a rubber duck museum. I sure hope the penguin doesn't get in there.
Yep.
And then this mechanical engineering building for, like, Intergang or whatever to get in there and steal all the tech.
Yeah, but as we established before, considering you have a 1 in 20 chance of just coming up with a new way to do physics, you can just go, yeah, I decided every day for 20 days I woke up and tried to make a perpetual motion machine, and on the 20th day, wouldn't you know, it worked.
That is a thing that we established reading through the first book, is that there's an automatic success on a roll of a 20, which means that you can accomplish these things that he wrote in is supposed to be fancifully impossible. Like, to discover Bigfoot or to develop a new law of physics.
Or to correctly identify the Mona Lisa.
There's new skills in this book, too, which have that same difficulty structure. And it's just,
oh, yeah. But it's all shit like parachuting or scuba diving or crap that you didn't need.
So it's not quite as impressive. The other new thing they added to character creation in this game is skill training packages. So you can become an expert. Every single one of them is a various type of military training. And then lo and behold, every single person who was important in the previous book now has military training.
Oh, yeah. Plus, there's like 3 different military academies in this city.
Oh, yeah, there were. There were like 3 military academies. There's a corrupt one and an upstanding one and a cheap one, I feel like it was.
Yeah. So you've got one that's like, we send all of our losers here, and they're mostly just assholes, and nothing gets done. And then there's like, this is where you go if you're rich, and you just want to be in the military. And then there's one where it's, we send regular grunts.
I'm going to bring this up, because I'm a little upset with Louis over this, or Lewis, or whatever his name is. There are black neighborhoods, and Mexican neighborhoods, and Chinese neighborhoods. There's even some new... He introduced the Vietnamese in this book. They had not been mentioned in the previous book, but now there's a Vietnamese gang and leaders... There's no gay neighborhood. He describes every neighborhood in exacting, careful detail. No gay neighborhood.
Yeah, because they would get the fuck out and go somewhere nice.
They usually don't. There's a gay neighborhood in Pittsburgh.
Aw, no one wants to be in Pittsburgh.
I know, but if you're going to be there, you might as well be in the gay neighborhood.
Hey, there probably is. They probably just took over some abandoned factory somewhere.
Oh, now they're Batman villains.
Yeah. Gay man.
I took over this gay factory.
All right, minions, don't be afraid to use your nails.
Oh, man, the Paul Lindian.
Oh, Paul Lind is the gay man.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. He knew that criminals were a cowardly and superstitious lot, and then a gay guy came through his window. I must become a gay.
Didn't even help the guy. He was just like, yes, I understand now.
Help me!
All right.
Okay. So... There's also some new benefits and drawbacks.
Yes, there are.
Woo, your favorite.
Well, Havens are particularly bad, so yeah.
Yep. So you get a few more things that do dumb crap. Like you can be, oh, I have no records. There's no record of me anywhere. No, nobody knows what my like, police record or my birth certificate is. I don't exist. I'm a ghost.
A lot of the ones in this book are dedicated towards seducing guys, because the new character that they do when they go through their character creation plan is a seductress.
Yep, so you can get some very, like, I'm a sexy talker. I talk sexily.
Yeah, and then they use them to create Black Widow Eve, their character.
Yay!
They gave Eve, and now we need to give her a good nickname. Black Widow Eve. That's it. That's perfect. Yeah. Done.
I love Black Widow Eve. You get all excited for Black Widow morning.
You get to open one spider on Black Widow Eve, but then you have to go right to bed.
Spider Claws only comes and visits the good children that are asleep.
And then he stands on their face.
Did you know you swallow 8 Spider Clauses in your life? Okay, so the new benefits you get are kind of, meh, whatever. You get, like, I'm big, or I've got, like, ice water in my veins, and I don't care about anything. And I'm, okay, whatever.
The funny thing to me is that they all have names like that. Like, ice water is literally the name of one of the benefits, and it's that you're, like, fearless.
Yeah.
Yeah, ice water.
Yay!
I like to think that you just have some. That's your I have some ice water. Who's thirsty?
So, one of the benefits you can get is a prodigy, which means you're just really good at something. So you pick a thing and you're better at that. But then they also gave inept as a drawback, and inept says you can pick a skill, and whenever you would roll that skill, you're just terrible at it. You take a normal penalty to the roll regardless of what's going on. Which is amazing, because you can take it, just like prodigy, multiple times.
I would not take prodigy multiple times.
I would. They're great. They're magic people and voodoo people.
They're also fire starters.
Twisted fire starters.
No, thank you. Yay, prodigy songs. The 90s.
Spike my bitch up. So, but if you take inept multiple times, you can be like, all right, scuba. I'm terrible at scuba. I get 3 extra bonus points. I'm also terrible at parachuting. I'll get 3 bonus points.
And skydiving. That's a different skill. I'm terrible at that, too.
Yeah, I'm terrible at surgery, whatever. You just take any skill that's super weird and niche, because it's, of course, got a bunch of those, and you go...
Art appreciation.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I don't know anything about art. It doesn't matter. I'm playing as one of the Freeze Police.
Yeah. Bang, bang, bang.
Freeze Police! No, that's... The gay district is where all the police are. That's it.
Oh, there you go, yeah. Yeah. The Freeze Police.
Freeze Police!
The Freeze Police, they come to me in my sleep.
Oh, that's good. And then you get some new special abilities, so you can have things like Heartless, where you don't care about anything, and you don't give a shit. You kick old ladies for fun, which means that you're, I don't know, you don't care if someone does something to you, if they try to influence you.
It's kind of weird. It feels like he really was trying real hard to write those new abilities as kind of heartless psychopath bad guy things. But then they just do something that where the name would make a lot more sense if it wasn't that. Like, that one, Heartless, you don't care if you take a wound penalty because you're always kicking old ladies. Why isn't it just tough?
Well, no, that... Okay, we've got... My favorite one is Out of Nowhere, which is a benefit you can get where it's just you get to appear behind people.
Yeah.
Like, great, you can Batman folks.
There's already stealth rules in this game.
Yeah.
All that did was make it so that you can't do that unless you have that ability.
No, man, you just take that ability, and then you become inept at stealth, so you're always making noise, except when you appear behind people.
Like, you have no idea how you got there? That's your power?
Yeah, you just show up behind someone and go, whoa, and drop a bunch of plates.
What am I doing here?
This is way too many ostriches.
Oh, come on.
So yeah, we get a whole bunch of dumb skills as well for, like, counterfeiting and mountaineering.
Perfect, that's a great thing. Oh, there's only one mountain in Haven.
Yeah.
City of Violence. So there's only one mountain and rich people live all over it, so go ahead and take it. It's got roads, so, you know, go ahead and take the mountaineering skill as a drawback.
Yeah, why not? So we then get more guns, because we didn't describe every gun.
Oh, go to guns? Guns, go back to the beginning of the gun section.
Okay. Here we go.
Because there is something special in the gun section that I want you to see, and it is... Amazing, and it's because it's another one of his. He starts it by saying guns.
Oh, guns.
He's playing Duck Duck Goose. I have no idea what's happening there. It's just another one of his little editing mistakes. It's right around here.
Guns.
He's forgotten S. I thought it was hilarious.
No, man. He was looking in bags. He's like, huh, guns! Guns! And then he opened one and there was just a gun in there. Okay. Gun!
Oh, so there's a whole new section of hyper-realistic guns for badasses to shoot each other with. And a whole bunch of new things you can do to update your gun, like decorating it or making it faster.
We added the 7.62mm M60E1, Rambo's favorite weapon.
I thought Rambo's favorite weapon was a bow and arrow, am I?
I thought Rambo's favorite weapon was his complete hatred and rage.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so speaking of, I want to get to my favorite section of this book.
All right.
Which is called putting the fear of God into your players.
Yay!
All right, this is a section about how to play as the God or Game Operations Director of Haven City of Violence. And it's a series of absolutely horrible advice pieces to your DM about how to run the game so that your players stay on edge and basically unhappy. So, first thing, institute that policy that you've probably been in one game in that you immediately quit of, if your characters say something, they actually say it, then their players, or sorry, if their players say something, then their character said that.
Yep.
No joking at the table of any kind.
Yeah, no, it had this, that entire thing in the Haven main book where it was just like, hey man, here are rules for how to be a good DM. The rules are, be a bad DM.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. I love this. Occasionally take a player out of the group and into the next room for a chat. Don't overuse this. It can get dull for the others if you are away for a while. Tell the players that everything they say to each other is in character, and only when addressing the god is any conversation out of character. Start passing pieces of paper with messages on them. Have the player read it, and then nod if they understand and return it. It's amazing to me that he's actually giving this kind of advice. Oh, my other favorite right here. Occasionally ignore the dice roll and narrate what makes for the best story. Obviously, this goes hand in hand with never letting the player see the rolls.
Yeah.
Why did you roll then?
Yeah, the main book when we talked about, it also had a section like that. And it was just, yeah, make sure you enforce, like, how deadly things are. And make sure you never let your players see anything you do and do this. And then, like, the last rule was, and always make sure you're having fun. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Here's a good one. Random die rolling behind your screen. Roll a few dice. Perhaps smile to yourself and continue as normal. And again, I want to read that. When I read that and it sounded like I should have put a period or a comma in there. Yeah, I probably should have, but, you know, it's not in the book. So it goes, this is a whole paragraph by itself. Random dice rolling behind your screen. Roll a few dice. Perhaps smile to yourself and continue as normal.
Yeah.
It just goes on like that. Here are a few tips for engendering uncertainty. Why are you doing that? Do you remember when you had a DM who would roll behind a screen and go, ooh, oh my, maybe.
Oh, this would be interesting.
This won't go well for you.
Oh. Yeah. No, the other thing that I love in this is because it goes into more depth for a lot of the places, the best thing in there, and fuck it, I'm just going to go ahead and use this opportunity to say my favorite thing in this book.
Sure.
Is, so we had the concept of Rome Island, which is Black People Island.
Yep.
It's where all the black people are.
Yeah, you remember that from, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Pinocchio where it's Donkey Island. That's a different thing.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, this is okay. Slightly more racist than
that. This is more racist than Donkey Island.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in Rome Island, everything sucks, everyone's poor, and apparently no one can leave?
Yeah.
And then it said that there was, like, gang violence all the time, and all of these black people just couldn't stop themselves from killing each other. And then Cyrus showed up, and Cyrus was a ridiculous badass, and he took over the entire island, and he runs everything now, and decided, fuck it, we're still gonna shoot each other for some reason?
Also, no one knows what he looks like, and no one's ever seen him. He lives in the one apartment complex on the island that's still standing, and there's not that many places to go on the island, but the whole thing is that there's a big air of mystery about who he really is, and no one's seen him.
It's so weird, because the time when they're talking about Cyrus, he sounds like a character that you'd go, oh yeah, everything sucked on Rome Island, and it was horrible, and he wanted to take over, so he took over, and it feels like the arc is going to be, and then he decided to make things like he was going to turn around and, like, take back Rome Island and make it a place that was worth living, and then fucking expand into the regular Haven City of Violence.
And then nope. He just holed up and is just running it as a big old gang island.
Yeah, he just then went, okay, great, now I'm done. I'm just going to sit here and shoot people.
Yeah. Because
why not?
Well, he's got a deal where if you betray him in any way, then it straight up says that he actually does castrate the betrayers with a rusty spoon.
Oh, yeah, and he'll go, like, he'll kill you and everyone close to you.
And he'll castrate all the male members of your family.
Yeah, I'm like, no. No, that guy doesn't rise to power. That guy gets shot immediately.
Yeah, the moment you're like, all right, I'm going to take your balls out with this spoon, your second-in-command's going to shoot you, which is happening in this book. The second-in-command, his second-in-command is like Malik Amal Shabazz, I want to say. I hope that's right. And he is currently working with Fear. Fear being the one-named, the mononymous leader of the Templar Knights, which is the racistest organization in town.
Yay, they hate everyone who isn't white.
Right. Except the one black guy they like working with on Rome Island, because and this is why they agree with each other. Malik and Fear agree that the black people should stay on Rome Island. And and Fear is okay with that. He's like, I don't mind having a black people island near us as long as it doesn't spill into the city. So that's what's happening there.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, the stuff in this book. Also, there's a list in this book of the 10 most powerful people in Haven.
Yep.
And numbers 1, 2, and 5 are confidential. You don't get to know that, dear reader.
Yeah, and it's not even like this was in a section of things the players know. It was in the section for the god.
Yeah, the game operations director.
So your GM doesn't know.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. Also, there's a serial killer that gets mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, what's his name?
Milk Baby.
Milk Baby, that's right. Milk Baby the serial killer.
Or monster, or something.
That if you go to the lighthouse on Rome Island, maybe you'll meet Milk Baby.
But pray you don't.
Because Milk Baby is terrifying.
So they describe this neighborhood. There's a lighthouse out on Rome Island, and they say that the whole thing is like there's a beach there, and it's completely hypodermic syringes. Like from top to bottom, it's syringes and condoms, yeah, and old gloves.
There's more syringes than there is sand.
Yeah. And that there is a smell of sour milk out there that accompanies a lot of murders that occur at this old lighthouse. And people know about the lighthouse, and it's supposed to be unoccupied, but maybe there's a monster, and pray you don't meet the Milk Baby. Except they don't tell you why he's got that name other than the sour milk smell, and they don't tell you anything about him. So it's just like hints. It's like, hey DM, here's a story hook you could use. Milk Baby.
Yeah, which I appreciate some hook ideas like that, but one, never tells you what it is. And two, you gave that the dumbest possible name. Like, Milk Baby. Milk. That sounds like...
One word, by the way.
That sounds like an insult you would call someone. Well, you're a little Milk Baby. You having some milk, Milk Baby?
I figured it was between P. Diddy and Puff Daddy.
Yeah. He went from Sean Puffy Combs to Puff Daddy to Milk Baby to P. Diddy.
Right.
Yeah, obviously.
That made sense to me. Okay, and then there's another mononymous character in here that I wanted to read the section from, if I may, because you've been doing a little reading, too. This section is just called Wind. And Wind is not a description of the weather conditions in Haven. Instead, it is Enigma describes what wind is best. Is wind a man? Is wind a woman? Is wind white? Is wind black? Is wind tall? Is wind short? These are all questions that have been asked of Haven's most impressive and mysterious hired killer.
So apparently we're playing Guess Who now?
I guess.
Does wind wear a hat? Is wind bearded? Is wind Amanda? You got it!
What is his real name? What he truly looks like is still a mystery to most, however. If you are unlucky enough to see Wind face to face, then you are already dead. Do not fool yourself. Wind is considered by all of the professional killers in the Haven underworld to be the most dangerous and deadliest assassin in Haven. If Wind has been hired to kill you, then get your personal affairs in order and get ready to meet your maker. The cost for Wind to make a hit is $100,000. You never have to worry about Wind missing. It never happens. Hope you never get the chance to meet Wind. It will be the last thing you do.
Yes.
Okay, so why is this guy in the book? What's the point here?
Because in Soviet Haven, wind breaks you!
Oh! That's lovely. In Soviet Haven, everything is terrible! Okay, so seriously, what's the point of this guy? If you literally can't beat him and you will never see him and he automatically kills you and he always gets you... Like, it says, no exceptions, he kills his man.
Yeah.
That means you can't sick him on the players unless you just want to fuck your players over.
100% guaranteed this was one of Lewis Porter Jr.'s characters.
Right. So here's the only way that Wind is useful in the game. if you get $100,000.
Yay!
So you can break the rule, you know, you're like, oh, I've got this big evil villain and he lives in a fortress made of rocket launchers and he's impenetrable and none of you guys can even try. Oh, okay, I hire Wind. I'd like to hire Wind, the killer who can't not kill.
Yay!
Okay, great. So, I know you earlier said what your favorite thing was about
it. What would you say your favorite thing is?
About this book? I'm going to say my favorite thing about this book is the concept of a milk baby.
The very notion of milk baby.
The notion just made me laugh so hard when I first read milk baby. otherwise, I don't know. What would you say is your least favorite thing about this?
Least favorite thing, definitely the new merits and flaws. They're just awful.
Yeah, there's nothing meritorious about them.
Yeah, it's just more ways to game the system, which you don't need to. It's a terrible system.
So my least favorite thing about this book is that there's literally multiple paragraphs separated throughout the book on the same topic. Cyrus is the name of the leader of Rome Island, the guy in charge of the island there.
The guy in charge of the Nubian Nation?
The Nubian Nation, that's correct. There is a section on the Nubian Nation of Rome Island, which is actually all about Cyrus. It's followed by another whole section on Cyrus, and then if you go about 50 pages further in the book, there's another section just called Cyrus that's all about Cyrus again. Now you may think, well, yeah, there's probably a lot of information about him. No, there isn't. It's the same shit three times.
Yep, it's just, this guy is powerful, everyone's afraid of him, no one gets to see him, meh.
Yeah, and that keeps happening. All the people in charge of Haven, like, let's say Gino Santucci Jr., we know he's insane. We know he controls a lot of the import trade. We know he's kind of a gangster, mobster, Italian stereotype. We know that because it says that three times throughout the book.
Yep.
And then every woman in the book, again, is a prostitute that made it big. Yeah. Every one of them is like, I used to be a prostitute, but now I've got a lot of money and I still prostitute on the side because I've got wicked sweet boobies, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Would you play Haven City of Violence? Has this changed your opinion?
It totally has. I've come around. I actually love Haven. No, fuck this.
You still can't play it, right? Would you play any other game better with better rules that was set in Haven?
I totally would. I would 100% play a one-shot in Haven where everyone dies, and it would be great.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Would you play Haven?
Same rules, yes.
City of Violence.
Oh, wait. City of Violence? Not Haven something else? Just Haven City of Violence?
Yeah, the Haven City of Violence. Not the other Haven.
Oh, okay. Not the City of Haven Violence of Rage?
Yeah.
Okay, good. No. I still think the rules for this are terrible. I wouldn't play this. This didn't fix anything. It's just a bunch of funny... I mean, admittedly, I'm really glad you own this book.
Oh,
because it's fun to read. It's really fun to read. And I'm sure we got it for like $3. So if you find this, buy it and read it, because this guy cannot write... It's like he doesn't know what an editor is.
It's so good.
There's the word businesses is in this book.
Businesses.
It's something like many businesses won't deal with these people. And it's spelled businesses correctly. And then he was like, well, that doesn't seem right. Something seems to be missing with the word businesses. I'll just slap an apostrophe S on the end of that and be done with it. He doesn't know what apostrophes do. businesses.
Okay. So good.
There you go. So... I again would also love to take all the great story that he writes, like all the filthy comic book stuff that he generates, and then run it in a system that isn't quite as openly, nakedly antagonistic.
Yeah, we'll just take City of Violence, we'll take Haven, and we'll run it in Maid.
Yeah, oh, perfect. Yeah, of course. Why didn't I think of that? We'll run Haven in Prime Directive.
Yeah, obviously. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Tune in next time when we run Haven in Prime Directive.
We're going to do our very first live play episode running Haven characters using Prime Directive rules... And then killing ourselves live on the air.
You will know when the podcast is over when you hear the gunshot.
It'll be one of them to get both of us. All right, so there you go.
Yep. That is all for this week. And
did you like doing the supplements?
Yep. I did enjoy our supplements. If there's any supplements for any stuff that we've done before that you want to have us talk about, let us know.
Sure. Absolutely. We're happy to do the occasional supplement here and there as long as it's funny as shit and as long as it's something we've already done so we don't have to go over the whole system again.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. What else you want to talk about?
So we, of course, always end every podcast telling you that you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. And I think I wanted to take a moment, just if you can, take like 3 seconds and review us on there. Give us a rating. Give us a short blurb that says... These idiots are great, or I hate these idiots, but I listen to them anyway, and I don't know why, or I just hate fuck the radio whenever I listen to this guy.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Have you actually read our iTunes reviews? They're great, because it's really easy to do, because there's only like 4 of them. And three of them were like, these guys are great. They're very funny, and they don't like RPGs. And then there's one guy that's like, so much cursing, 1 star.
Yay. Please leave us a review that tells everyone how much you love cursing.
Anyway, definitely go rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher, because every time we get rated up like that, if we get a few hundred of those, then before you know it, people who would not listen to this podcast are still being recommended.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to be how new people are going to find the podcast. It'll be how we get anyone to actually recognize what's going on. Hell, maybe we could get a sponsor. That wasn't Cheese Dudes.
That would be hilarious. I mean, I don't know if Tony Pepperoni or whatever his name is would be up with us doing that.
Porkadillo. Come
Tommy,
on, man.
Tommy Porkadillo.
He is our sponsor. He is going to be so pissed off that you fucked up his name.
He doesn't listen to this show.
That's true. He just pays us in cheese.
He's just too busy frying up cheese to pay us with. Okay, so there you go. iTunes and Stitcher, both under System Mastery. You can also find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Please follow us on Twitter. I've been hovering at 95 followers for weeks, and it's infuriating. Get me to 100, please.
Come on, that milestone where you almost feel like people care.
Yeah, that would be amazing for me. And then, of course, we have some shirts for sale. If you want to buy our System Mastery shirts or our Cheese Dude shirt, you can do that at TeePublic by just Googling for System Mastery.
And if anybody asks you what Cheese Dudes is, please tell them that it is an actual restaurant and it exists in Las Vegas.
That's the plan. If you're worried about how to explain that weird shirt, just explain to them that it's a real restaurant, because that's the goal. The more people in this world believe in Cheese Dudes, the more likely it is to come into existence. That's the secret, people. We're both proponents of Oprah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's about it. Got anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Good. We're all set then. Thank you. Have a lovely week.